A meeting of the House Judiciary Committee for Wednesday, February 20, 2008. Our agenda consists of two bills that we were going to take up in public hearing yesterday, but we had insufficient time to do so, so we rolled them over to today's agenda. And we'll take, because we have one of our members who has to do some business here next door on another bill, I'm going to take up the shorter one of these here first, Senate Bill 1088. I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1088. We have a single witness signed up. First we'll hear from staff and then we'll hear from him.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1088A comes with the request to Senate Interim Judiciary Committee. It clarifies that a juvenile court has the same authority to suspend the driving privileges of a juvenile offender that a circuit court has for an adult offender. This is a cleanup from a older clarification in 2003 that eliminated this ability. Jack Evans is here from DMV.
Very good. Mr. Evans, thank you for coming back, and I apologize for your having to sit through our meeting yesterday and us not getting to your presentation.
Not a problem, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jack Evans with the Department of Transportation, here to ask for your support for Senate Bill 1088. This measure corrects an earlier statutory drafting error and restores authority to revoke and suspend the driving privileges of youthful offenders that come before the juvenile court, and also allows then DMV to post these convictions to the youth's driving record. Normally, finding that a individual in the jurisdiction of the juvenile court is not equivalent to a conviction of a crime or offense. An exception is found in ORS 809-412, which is a statute that deals with revocation and suspension of driving privileges. In the 2003 session, there was a complete rewrite of Chapter 809 of the Vehicle Code, and during that rewrite, it was not intended to have any substantive change. It was just an organizational change, but unfortunately, an inadvertent drafting error occurred, which narrowed 809-412 to only two statutes, and these are the statutes that just deal with some of the more serious offenses like manslaughter, reckless driving, evading a police officer, those types of things. What it left out were all the offenses for which you can be suspended or revoked that touch upon the Provisional Driver Improvement Program, Habitual Offender Program, but also DUI. So as a result, the courts cannot, the juvenile courts, if an individual comes, for example, before a juvenile court with a DUI, that person's driving privileges cannot be suspended, and DMV cannot post those suspension to the driving record, so that if there's a subsequent offense where you'd normally have an enhancement of the penalty for a subsequent DUI, that can't occur. And then in addition, also you'd have situations of where there's inconsistency. One youth from a county may be adjudicated in juvenile court for a DUI, and another would be adjudicated in adult court for a DUI, and they'd be treated differently because of this error. What this concept does is corrects that. It says that DMV can suspend license and revoke the license of individuals that are found to be within the jurisdiction of the juvenile court for those offenses that involve just these traffic offenses for revoking that would result in the revocation and suspension of driving privileges. And it allows DMV to post those convictions to the driving record of the individual so that subsequent convictions, say for DUI, could receive the enhanced penalty under the law. So what we're asking for your support, we don't envision that we'll need to go back and suspend people anew. What this will do is allow us to go forward and suspend cases and post them to the driving record.
Any question for Mr. Evans? That's pretty simple. Thank you, Mr. Evans. If there's nobody else signed up, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1088 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1088.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1088 as amended to the floor to do pass.
Barker moves Senate Bill 1088A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion of the motion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Hamilton?
Aye.
Representative
Tamley? Aye.
Representative Flores? Aye. Representative Comp?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Vice Chair Wooten?
Excused. I was here a moment ago, but let's poke our head out and see if he's just outside and wants to vote. Not within sight, so he's excused. Aye. Motion carries, and Senate Bill 1088 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And this would look suitable for the consent calendar to me. Is there any objection to the consent calendar listing? Hearing none, then so ordered. And close the work session on Senate Bill 1088A. I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1095. And we have Representative Clem and Senator Winters. I think I saw her come into the... and Representative, I'm sorry, Senator Whitsitt as well. And, maybe and in what order? I could have all three of you together. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'll go third.
Thank you, Chairman McPherson, members of the committee. My name is Doug Whitsett. I represent the Senate District 28. In Klamath County, a young man had been arrested multiple times for possession and distribution of methamphetamine and who was released on bail for each of these charges pending trial. Entered an apartment of acquaintance, became upset, and is alleged to have committed two aggravated murders and one attempted aggravated murder while released on his multiple bails. The young woman that was shot in the head and survived has no idea what prompted the attack. The accused man fled from Oregon and resisted extradition to face these charges. Senate Bill 1095 is a very simple measure. The bill requires a minimum $500,000 security bail bond for anyone awaiting for trial, the manufacture of methamphetamine, manufacture or distribution of methamphetamine within 1,000 feet of a school, possession or delivery of more than 10 grams of meth, or a commercial drug offense involving methamphetamine. For your information, 10 grams of methamphetamine is about 100 doses. The Oregon Judicial Department estimates that a single charge or a combination of these charges occur as many as 10,000 times each year in Oregon. The bill is designed to close the prevalent revolving door of arrest charges and bond posting followed by further crimes and by repeated arrest and charges and bond postings while out on bond. We believe that the $500,000 bond is not excessive but rather appropriate for these crimes that are in our minds in many ways equivalent to aggravated murder. Those who manufacture and purvey larger quantities of methamphetamine are killing our youth, killing our families, and killing our communities. With premeditated purpose, these criminals are sentencing their victims to hell on earth, sentencing them to a prolonged downward spiral of an addiction they know will lead to the certain destruction of the victim's character, their health, their family, their community, and ultimately their lives. They know with certainty that once addicted to methamphetamine, these victims will be unable to break the bonds of that addiction. They know with certainty that most of their victims will be forced by that addiction into a life of criminal activity to support their dependency on methamphetamine. The greatest cost is in the human tragedy. The cost to our communities and state is immeasurable. The savings to our communities by preventing these criminals from continuing to prey on their victims while out on bail will be virtually immeasurable. Section 1, subsection 2 and 3 of the bill clearly provides for defendants with the opportunity to plead their case that the security bond is excessive and requires the state to produce evidence that the security bond is not excessive. Section 1, subsection 5 provides that if the court finds that the defendant is eligible for a security deposit of less than $500,000, it may reduce the security deposit to no less than $50,000. However, if that defendant commits a new criminal offense while released on bail, the security deposit shall be no less than $500,000. If the defendant violates the conditions of the security release without committing a new crime, the security deposit shall be no less than $250,000. Finally, Senate Bill 1095 allows the county or court or the county commission to implement a jail capacity limit and action plan to decide locally who should be released in the event that available space or available funding prevents housing of all defendants being held. It allows the local community, the local community corrections, to matrix out those prisoners. And I believe that that's a very important part of this bill. I believe that the people who are looking those defendants in the eye have a better idea of who should be kept incarcerated and who shouldn't. Senate Bill 1095 passed out of the Senate unanimously with a 30-0 vote. I urge an aye vote. I do pass a recommendation for committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Whitsitt. Let's hear from Senator Winters now.
Thank you, Chair McPherson. I'm State Senator Jackie Winters. I represent Senate District 10, and I support Senate Bill 1095. And let me give you a little background history on how this came about, this particular proposal. Some of you may remember, and thanks to Representative Krieger and Senator Jenny Burdick, this assembly passed comprehensive legislation in 2005. And that legislation actually dealt with the pseudoephedrine. As a result of that piece of legislation, we have seen a dramatic decrease in the mom-and-pop cookers in Oregon. They have virtually disappeared. That's the good news. The bad news is that we've now seen a shift in suppliers. We've seen a shift to where the suppliers are coming up through I-5. We've seen where we're talking organized, very organized crime and not mom and pops. Senator Courtney and I, as co-chair, developed through a small seed grant from Ways and Means, $75,000, and put together a methamphetamine strike force for Marion County. It consists of public-private individuals with the goal to reduce the sale and manufacturing of methamphetamine in our communities, to rebuild families that have been torn apart by this drug, which we know has devastated and destroyed families in the state of Oregon, and to find ways to prevent manufacturing. This strike force, as it came together, one of its first tasks was to look at the drug trafficking, and we developed what was called the methamphetamine strike force. And interesting enough, this community rallied together, and they decided that that would be their first strategy to go after the mid and upper level drug dealers. They also, as a part of the strategy, in doing that, we looked at the major cities inside of the county, which included Salem, Kaiser, and Woodburn. And all law enforcement that represents those cities came together, including the state police, as well as our sheriff, as well as our DA, and they make up our strike force. They make up in working together in tandem to actually investigate, to identify the individuals, and actually to go after them. And they've been quite successful, I might add. And our DA is here and will share some of those statistics with you. But as a part of those strategies was also the strategy that we did not want a revolving door. We wanted to make it difficult. So Marion County came up with, we need to make the bail high enough, because we're not talking about anymore the mom and pops. We're talking now about the mid and upper level dealer, which quite frankly do have the resources if they want to bail out. But we want them off the street. You know, make no you know, I make no excuse or make no qualms to say that this level that we're going after are individuals that have destroyed our communities, who are, I call them parasitic. We talk about predatory lenders. These are parasites. These are predators who are preying on not only our kids, but families. To date, in Marion County, we've had 28, and these are organized families, 28 arrests. Of those, 21 have been successfully prosecuted. One of them has been given 15 years. He's a mid-level dealer. And he was also engaged in other criminal activities, because I think what you'll find is that, you know, we're getting into stolen property. We're getting into ID theft crimes. And if you want to look, if when we looked at the pounds or the seizures, it averaged 2.7 pounds. That's a lot of meth out there on the streets. And so for us, in Marion County, we actually got together and we said we hope that this session would not only do it for Marion County by our own ordinance, but that we believe that statewide we should be getting a lot tougher and making it a lot more difficult for individuals to be able to just to recycle through our jails. I don't know about you. I think we did a yeoman's job, thanks to Representative Krieger and Burdick. But the job and the war isn't won. You know, it's still out there. And if we think that because what we passed a few sessions ago, that all is well, it is not. And I would encourage you to do as we have done in the Senate and give this a unanimous vote. We need all the tools that we can get to fight this war. And this is just another tool to help our DAs and our sheriffs and our law enforcement community. As you probably know, I'm very passionate about this. I started on this issue in 99, and I'm going to continue working on this issue till no longer in Oregon will we have to talk about the devastation of methamphetamine in our community. And I thank you, Chair McPherson, for letting us express our views and our opinion, but also our facts of what this particular bill will do, and to help us with just another tool in order to fight this particular issue. With that, and I do hope, my district attorney is here, who can add more substance to my comments, and I do just encourage you for a unanimous vote.
Thank you, Senator Winters. We do appreciate your coming and your passion on this and many other issues. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brian Clem, State Representative from East and Central Salem. Just wanted to appear briefly to show some unity in the Salem area delegation. This is a recommendation from our Marion County Meth Strike Force. And this, you know, really targets commercial industrial side of methamphetamine. The possession portion is not included in the bill. And so we really are talking about people who are making money off of this and doing it as a commercial / industrial activity, not the user. And then just the one thing I want to say about my DA before he comes up, Walt Beglaws, you are just as likely to see him at a forum about Head Start, Healthy Start, and Relief Nurseries, Family Court, as you are on a bill that would be dealing with stiffer penalties or minimum bails. He's very much aware that you have to be smart on crime, and it's a holistic, comprehensive sort of package, and I think you're going to enjoy hearing from him. But it's a good bill, and it is necessary to keep people who are, you know, they've got a lot of money they're making off of this. You have to have the bail somewhat commensurate with what their potential is. And the bill includes specific parameters around clear and convincing evidence that there's a danger the defendant will either fail to appear in court, commit a new crime, or pose a threat to the protection of the public. And so the judge has to be convinced that they are likely to commit a crime, as Senator Whitson indicated, happens routinely while out on bail. And, you know, at some point they're going to go away. The question is what happens to them while we're waiting for that to occur.
Thank you, Representative Clem. Any questions for any of these witnesses? Then senators and representatives, thank you very much for attending. And next we'll hear from Walt Beglaw, the Marion County District Attorney.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Member of the committee, my name is Walt Beglaw. I'm the Marion County District Attorney, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. I'm confident they'll back me up on this particular bill. And I'm here on behalf of the citizens of Marion County. I'd like to just initially thank Senator Winters for being our champion in this arena. Let me start with talking about this particular bill. Establishing appropriate security is really a critical component of a public safety system. If you don't have the right tools, it will be difficult to hold anyone, let alone drug dealers, accountable for their behavior. If I could, let me share how this actually works in Marion County. We have established a presumptive security in the amount of $500,000 for anyone who delivers or manufactures meth, period. This bail is captured in a schedule. It's an order that our presiding judge has signed. And on that order is these particular offenses, but all the other offenses as kind of a tool, a management tool, a starting point for security for all offenses that come through our local jail. When a drug dealer is arrested and lodged, that presumptive security amount is attached, and the defendant is promptly and by statute brought before a judge, a magistrate, called an arraignment. Usually happens within 36 hours. If not, if it's a weekend, a holiday, a judge actually comes in and reviews the probable cause affidavit that the police officer signed for the arrest of that individual. So you've got a neutral magistrate checking to make sure we've got the right defendant and that there's probable cause for each element of the offenses that they have been lodged on. At the time of arraignment, then, the court may review that presumptive amount, whatever offense it might be, including that $500,000 on these delivery cases. And then a hearing can be set. The judge might review it right then and there and hear the facts to retain that amount, reduce it, or even elevate it, or at the request of the defendant, who is clearly allowed counsel at that time, can request a hearing. And our courts are very prompt in getting that accomplished because we understand at that time they're simply accused of that particular offense. In either event, the court retains the authority to set security based on statutory criteria. You've looked at the statute. It has primary and secondary deals. And the bottom line is they're looking at, is this individual going to show up again? Do they have a history of failure to appear? Are they likely to reoffend? Is there a risk of that? And frankly, what is the risk to the community? And all of these statutes, if you read through them, are intertwined. They have constitutional provisions, statutory provisions, and then unique ones to these particular offenses. But that's the bottom line criteria. On a narrow basis, Senate Bill 1095 models that concept we have in Marion County. It's a process that is quite fair and retains, as we have heard, inherent procedural safeguards that are very important. And let me highlight them. It allows the court, again, to make appropriate fact-based adjustments to that security amount, placing the burden on the state to demonstrate those things. And if you've been in a courtroom, what we're saying is, oh, look at here, judge, here's their criminal history. They've got a prior crime and a failure to appear. We're concerned about that. Could you keep the $500K? Or there might be no history, and sometimes we actually stipulate to a reduced amount. These things are going on daily in your courtrooms. Most certainly, it allows counsel for the individual. It allows local corrections, as you've heard before, and the governing bodies, your Board of Commissioners, to take appropriate steps to ensure that the jail can actually manage their population, triage their facility, and make those adjustments as necessary. That's exactly what we did with our presiding judge, our courts, and our Board of Commissioners in this particular when we put in our $500K bail on deliverers about a year ago. I recognize the concern that certain counties, their jails, managing that population might have. But we've done this for over a year. Marion County books 20,000 people a year into our facility and holds 528, and we're getting this done. And I'm confident any local county can manage to make the adjustments and work within their community to get this accomplished. It's just we've done it here. We see a tremendous amount of work in Marion County, as you have heard. It does set that floor at 50,000 if the judge wants to step back. But the bottom line, and I'm going off memory here, most of these offenses listed are A felonies or B felonies. It's 40,000 presumptive on those in statute right now. The bottom line is these are the worst of the worst offenses, delivery of meth to a kid. I mean, on the West Coast, they're flavoring. It's called Strawberry Quick. They're flavoring methamphetamine to entice kids to engage in this behavior. Get them locked in one particular incident. So these are the offenses that are listed here, the manufacturer. And Senator Winters is quite correct. We have eliminated the local production. There was 18 meth labs in the state of Oregon in 07, hundreds, near over 500 just 4 years ago. So we've shifted our focus here. And this is that tool for that interdiction that's coming up from Mexico on I-5 and Canada. We're getting it from both sides now. So that particular piece is very important. Again, it applies to the most destructive meth offenses that we have, and most of these, again, I'm going from memory, are level 8s on the guidelines, so they are presumptive prison as it stands. And judges look very critically in regards to security and whether the offense is presumptive prison. So those are some of the highlights, those procedural safeguards I wanted to kind of pinpoint today for you. I guess in closing, it really all rests in the value we have placed on holding those accountable whose intent is to profit from delivering meth into our communities. And quite frankly, to endanger the lives of children. In Marion County, since January 1st of 2005, we have taken into protective care and rescued over 2,500 children in Marion County alone, primarily due to methamphetamine. I'm not talking dozens. I'm not talking hundreds. We are talking thousands of children that are systemically, that you have dealt with on a year to year on trying to make adjustments and rescue these families from this particular scourge. So the degree of harm makes sense to put this in terms of that security piece right side by side with the most serious events. I can't think of a domestic public safety challenge that is more serious than this ever than methamphetamine. And I've been doing this for 20 years. So what I've handed out to you, and Senator Winters alluded to this, is simply a year-to-date progress report for the strike team. And we have, that's the enforcement level team going after the mid-level and where we've had some good accomplishments. We've got a lot of work to do, but we wanted to showcase some of these numbers for you. It's a very difficult and dangerous business to be in. I walked in our building the other day with one of the key investigators, detectives on our team, and it was nice to hear him say, "Walt, it's operating the way you intended it." And when I have my street level people telling me that, then I know we're getting them what they need. They need this. So, again, thank you. I'll take any questions, and I really appreciate the time to come before this committee.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for the important work you're doing. I have a question. I'm trying to figure out procedurally how this works on page 1, line 7, there's the language, except when the defendant is charged by indictment, that there is probable cause. So when the defendant is charged by indictment, do you go down to the B level and show the clear and convincing evidence? I'm just trying to figure out the meaning of that, except when the defendant is charged by indictment, and how that affects, and how many are charged by indictment, and how many are charged by other than indictment.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you're exactly correct. You would step down to B because by indictment there is a presumption finding by a grand jury of probable cause and that there is sufficient evidence to charge under statute. So at that particular junction, a good percentage of them, because in custodies we have to go to the grand jury within 5 days of their initial arrest, so a good percentage, I'm not going to guess for you, a good percentage are going to be under that particular, and so that judge wouldn't have to make that particular first predicate finding. Again, between arrest and prior to grand jury and arraignment, there is a judge that steps in looking at the basis, the probable cause that is sufficient to hold that individual. So it is kind of a continuum. I hope that helps.
It does. Thank you very much.
Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Begla, and thank you, Senators. Senator Whitsitt had mentioned that the substantial quantities of methamphetamine under ORS 475-900 that references the 10 grams or more, and he indicated that that's 100 doses or hits. Can you give us an estimate of what the street value of a hit is and that what street value of 100 grams would be?
Goodness, I should have Mr. Chair, Representative Flores, I should have had my street experts here to talk a little bit more. I don't want to guess on that. It's hundreds. I mean, the price has gone up to over $1,000. I think it's about $1,900 an ounce right now. And I just got this from our strike force 2 weeks ago. So the more we've clamped down. So I guess if you break down the total, that's about $1,400 to $1,900 an ounce is the current market value of methamphetamine. So if you do the math, we're talking about some cost here. The representative is correct. It is 10 grams or more. For a commercial offense, there's four key pieces in there for your information. If they've got a firearm, if they've used packaging material, if they have $300 more in cash, and for consideration, which is an exchange of cash usually for that particular object. So those are the factors on commercial, and it's 10 grams or more for the other piece there.
So just a quick follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
When you mentioned you found the reference to 2.5 pounds, that's a huge quantity, and that's a huge circle of people that are being marketed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Flores, absolutely. We're talking destructive, high cash, high volume, profit-based approach, and that's exactly what the strike force is designed to do. Is target that those couriers, so to speak, into our communities.
Representative Shields. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for being here, Mr. Begelow. You had a lot of respect for the work that you do personally as well as the meth strike force. How many people has this affected in a year? How many people get the $500,000 bond? And then what typically happens to them? And do they stay in jail for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year until their case is processed?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shields, good question. I don't have current stats, but I do know that my office does probably about 250 to 300 deliveries a year, and 80% or more of them are methamphetamine. It is the primary offense. The bottom line is, under our current scale, you got to come up with $50,000 to get out, and a handful of them do, because at this level, they can afford that, and the money is wired, the money shows up. We do hold the ones that they decide to let go, and so they are held. We're able to basically work through and have them held accountable. So I'm not being real distinct for you on the numbers, but that gives you kind of a sketch of what we're facing. And we're a county of about 310,000, and Multnomah is twice our size. I would imagine they have a significant delivery issue in Multnomah County as well.
Okay, can I follow up? Go ahead. So do you think in your county you're talking about
you know, 10, 20, 100 people who end up staying in jail maybe for 3 or 4 months on this kind of charge?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shields, I'm not going to guess. Our sheriff couldn't join us today. When we first presented, we connected with our jail commander, and the sheriff was here, and it would be nice, very appropriate, to have those numbers for you today, but I don't.
Okay.
But I appreciate the question. It's a very important question. The bottom line, though, is that we work with them to make sure that adjustments are made, and my jail commander has assured us that we can manage this. He has assured us that, and we've been 1 year in on this. And so those decision-making points are addressed quite regularly.
And then finally, if I could, Judge Maurer is the presiding judge in Multnomah County now, a former prosecutor, and I was just curious if you've heard any discussion from Multnomah County, either the judiciary or the sheriff's office or the district attorney's office there, what they think about taking this statewide.
Mr. Chair, Representative Shields, I have not heard anything specific out of Multnomah County. I know our presiding and our bench says, good idea. The only caution they have is don't lock us in. Retain that judicial scrutiny, and that's a good thing.
And
that's a good thing because there is a range of delivers. Some of the total heavy hitters and commercial offenses, the pound ones, and then there's down at the other end the less offensive, so to speak. And so you got to have those adjustments being made. And my prosecutors, well, quite frankly, we'll stipulate sometimes to step down because we know that we don't have a key player. So it's very good for the judges to have that. I know locally my judges support this, and I'd be surprised if there was any kind of interest to not have that tool. You talk to any, well, I don't know if I should do this, you talk to any defense attorney, and they'll talk about it. It's important that I can connect with my client. And a lot of these deliverers at the high end, they're going to take off. They're in a profit-driven business, and if you don't have them in your jail, they're gone. And so they can set up shop in another place. What I've learned, and it's on the back of this sheet here, is that our strike force has physically driven our mid-level dealers away from Marion County, trying to distance them from their market, because we're tightening up around Marion County. So they're going to operate from Multnomah County or a different county. I'm just giving an example. So because the strike force works every yard of Marion County. So we know that they have those kind of responses. We know they take off. And we think this is fair, though, that this has those safeguards. So,
and then lastly, just to get on the record, if our sheriff decides that we've got a number of violent offenders that they do not want to matrix out, this would not prevent them from using the matrixing calculations that they currently use, right? That's what that last sentence of the bill means.
Correct, Mr. Chair, Representative Shields. That was placed in there to allow that local capacity to make those adjustments. That's good, too, because every community is different, mm-hmm. and everyone has different levels of capacity. So that's exactly what we've done, and you've got to retain that authority local, and that's a good idea.
Thank you.
Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When we did the meth package in 2005, you were part of that. And at the time we did it, we knew that wasn't going to be the cure-all. So when I look at this as a great compliment to what we did as we move forward and realize unanticipated, you know, consequences, that type of thing, that we can now come back and make adjustments. When I looked at the bill, I saw the safeguards in there by the court findings that you're really targeting the manufacture and delivery of substantial quantities. And then I see what we're doing there. And, Mr. Chair, we've got 1087 coming. And my question to you or to Mr. Taylor would be, in that bill we have meth of a certain quantities also has an enhanced penalty. So those people then, because of this bill, that would carry over to that bill as far as that particular crime of meth, that would be a larger bond they'd have to put up, this $500,000 to get out. Is that right? Within that bill?
This has the impact of requiring a larger bond.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the bill that we're talking about, 1087, deals with larger quantities.
Mm-hmm.
The way I read this, it deals with any amount and then you have to have additional findings. It also allows the chair members of the committee that the court could set bail at $50,000.
But for some of those people,
it doesn't distinguish by the amount.
Yeah, but it does mean that some of those people are, even though they're going to be qualifying for a larger prison sentence, because of the circumstances in this bill, they in fact will have to have a larger bail posting in order to get out if they hit the criteria.
Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Craig, yes, under this bill, if you're talking about someone who's dealing with over 500 grams of meth, yes. Most assuredly, I think, just by the very amount looked at by clear and convincing evidence that the danger of the defendant will fail to appear. Well, you're talking about a fairly substantial dealer. My assumption is right now they could probably use that same criteria in the statute to set a fairly large bond to, but you're right.
Counselor, do we know how the substantial quantities reference here, it's a cross-reference to 475-900, how that corresponds to the quantities that are addressed in 1087?
That's the 10
Mr. Chair, that's
or
the
more.
10 grams.
Or more.
That's 10 grams.
It is 10, okay. Okay, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Bigelow, for coming. When I first saw this bill, I was thinking of I don't have Google in my head, or I have the name of the Nixon's Attorney General who talked about preventative detention. You end up going to prison in the end anyway himself. But his wife was Martha, but I just can't remember his name. Anyway,
Mitchell.
Thank you. One small concern I have that they have to request a hearing at arraignment, and it seems to me that you don't always have a lawyer at arraignment, so somebody might get in there and not know enough to ask for that, and then they've lost their chance, and I just want an even playing field, because I'm sure if you have an attorney, he's going to say, I'd like to have a release hearing.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Barker, in Marion County, and I believe this is the practice statewide, they are entitled an attorney at arraignment, and the practice is they are immediately provided an attorney at the arraignment, even just on a charging instrument prior to arraignment on an indictment. And so that lawyer is physically present in the courtroom at the time this happens. They could identify that this is a 500K meth delivery case, request a hearing. Quite frankly, in Marion County, there'd be a little exchange right then and there at that initial appearance about, is this the appropriate figure for this particular individual? And we, the DA, could provide some information. So I have a great level of confidence that the playing field would be level in terms of representation from the get-go.
I was sure in the bigger counties, but I don't want somebody getting stuck just because from a different jurisdiction that they don't have that. And I also want to compliment those who wrote this for putting in the safety valves for the judge and everything to make sure that we're not.
Mr. Begal, what happens now as to the amount of bail? Is it entirely discretionary with the court based on criteria about flight risk? Is there anything that prevents a judge from applying a $500,000 bond now?
Mr. Chair, there's nothing that prevents that from happening. The judge currently has the authority to set appropriate security amounts. And as you're aware, there's three levels of release. There's personal recognizance, that's you're just let out. Then there's conditional release, where there's conditions set, no money, and then security release. This is that floor and above for these particular offenses about security. Judge has that authority. What happens now in some other counties right now with these offenses is it's set on what level of felony it is. So an A felony is $40,000, a B felony is $20,000, a C felony is $10,000. Hope I'm getting that right. It's been a while since I've been in a courtroom. Those are the current standard bails, and that the court then has primary and secondary criteria that they will analyze at a hearing or at arraignment in terms of should I go up or down. And those primary ones are the ones I mentioned before. Are they going to show up? What is the risk to the public? That is in the Constitution, by the way, the risk to the public, even though this is a victimless crime with the quotation marks around it. And are they likely to reoffend? I think that's the language, the danger of likelihood. So that's kind of they're using their crystal ball approach. That's what goes on in a courtroom. So that authority is inherent in our statutory scheme right now.
And these crimes here would fall at what tier generally, or are they expand?
These are A felonies. These are I'd have to look them all up. I didn't do that before I got here, but I'm confident they're A's or B's because these are delivery to kids.
So at A, what was the figure you just gave us for the
40 for A, 40,000 for A, 20,000 for B, and 10,000 for C felonies.
So in effect, the effect of this bill then is to take what is that now a presumptive $40,000 bail to $500,000 for these offenses.
With, Mr. Chair, with the opportunity at this hearing to drop down to $50,000, so $10,000 more than that A felony presumptive that currently exists. And I guess it doesn't take anyone to understand that I'm a big fan of that because I put this crime side by side with the most serious of offenses our community can face in law.
Chairman, members of the committee, one of the anomalies of our drug laws is that certain substances like heroin and cocaine are treated more seriously than methamphetamines. In most cases, methamphetamine is a B felony, and heroin and cocaine is an A felony. Mm-hmm. Historical reasons for that going all the way back to federal law and their schedules. But.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions for Mr. Bigelow?
Chairman of the committee, I have a question, Mr. Bigelow. The Constitution says excessive bail shall not be required, and you mentioned you have these particular bail provisions in Marion County. Has that been challenged on those grounds?
Mr. Chair, counsel, boy, you think I'd have the quick answer to that. Not up through the appellate court. Mm-hmm. I don't think there is anything pending. I imagine case by case some of the defense attorneys have objected, but I don't think it's gone anywhere with our bench because the bench, through its court order, found this to be the standard security amount for it. As far as the constitutionality, and we've talked a little bit about that, anyone's always available to challenge the constitutionality of the proportionality of a particular bail amount. And so, again, just as district attorney, I have a high level of confidence that the fact-finding process here, this would be supported constitutionally, given the risk that the crime carries with it. So that's a long-winded answer to that. But
okay, thanks. Ms. Christian, you were on the witness list already, and then you came forward here. I don't know if you wanted to respond to something in particular or whether it makes sense for Mr. Bigelow to stay at the table there. If yours was in response to something he said, it might make sense to heap him forward.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ann Christian, and I would appreciate Mr. Bigelow staying here. I signed up to testify, not to take a position on this bill, but to present two matters with regard to the bill. First, I want to thank Senator Whitsitt and Senator Winters. On the Senate side, the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association did oppose the bill as originally drafted. It included possession of controlled substance and did not have many of the protections that have been mentioned that are currently in the bill as amended. So I really appreciate the opportunity to participate in a work group. And what we decided to do, Mr. Chair, is to fashion the bill on existing law for Measure 11. I think it's always good if there's a law out there that has been tested to try to use that current law as a framework. And so the work group decided to fashion the standards and the procedures for the methamphetamine security on Measure 11 offenses. And that framework or that statute is 135.240. And it follows almost exactly Measure 11 with the meth provisions in Senate Bill 1095. But one of the reasons I wanted to testify is that Mr. Taylor brought up the issue of excessive bail. So in this current bill, there's a provision for a minimum of $50,000 security. There was a case called State v. Sutherland in 1999 that addressed the Measure 11 statute that we're using as a framework for this bill. And the court held in that case that a minimum amount of bail for Measure 11 in and of itself is not unconstitutional. It's okay to have a statute that sets a minimum bail. But the court went on to say that each individual defendant standing before a judge has a constitutional right to a determination whether in that particular case for that particular defendant, whether $50,000 is an excessive bail. And what the bill does not include, if we were looking at the Measure 11 statute and just saying here's section 1, 2, 3, 4, the Measure 11 of ORS has a fifth section that expressly says that the court shall set a security amount of not less than $50,000. That's what this bill says as well. But the Measure 11 statute goes on to say, unless the court determines that amount, meaning the $50,000, to be unconstitutionally excessive. So when I first saw the amendment on the Senate side, I was concerned that there was an error and that the fifth little subsection had not been added. I have talked with legislative counsel and I've talked with staff counsel to the committee, and it's clear under law that an individual defendant always has the right to challenge the constitutionality, the excessive bail. And so for a number of reasons, I just wanted to be able to testify today to make the record that the fact that there is not this provision for the excessive bail challenge is not because there's been a policy decision by this legislature to not provide that. It's a little uncomfortable for me to have that provision in one statute but not in this. But since it's clear, and we now have a record that there's no intent to deny people such hearings and findings of unconstitutionality, and with the short time frame, frankly, I'm fine with this bill moving forward. But I just wanted to be able to let judges and others know, because Multnomah judges have had some difficulty with the Measure 11 statute recently, and so I guess I'm a little gun-shy. So with that, I want to make the record, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions people may have as far as what's happened with the Measure 11 cases and what we would anticipate would happen with these methamphetamine delivery and manufacture cases.
Any questions for Ms. Christian? Counsel Taylor.
Mr. Committee, Ann, are you referring to ORS 135-240, subsection 5?
Mr. Chair and staff, that's correct, 5A.
Now, Mr. Chairman, as a committee, if I could follow up with a couple of questions. So let's say, for example, you have someone who's charged with manufacturing methamphetamines in the sense they repackaged and they handled a very small amount to another person, and the police happens to be a police officer. And they don't have any prior record. The way I read this bill is that they would... The court would first make a determination that there's clear and convincing evidence they'll fail to appear. And let's say there's good evidence that they will appear and there's no new crime.
Correct.
So it would then fall to the default amount of $50,000. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Now, are you saying that if for some reason they were unable to afford the $50,000 because they were indigent, that the court would have a constitutional ability to impose a lesser bail than that?
Mr. Chair and staff counsel, that is what I'm saying. And what it is it's called an as-applied challenge to the court. So if I'm the individual who clearly I've never had any charge against me, I'm employed. I'm employed at McDonald's, but I'm a responsible party, but I don't have the security to post. Clearly, there's a constitutional right and the judge could find that the $50,000 is excessive and violates my constitutional right to be released on reasonable bail.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions?
Thank you,
Ms. Christian. Thank you, Mr. Begla. I appreciate your coming back a second day to accommodate our schedule. We have one more witness signed up, Paul Snyder from the Association of Oregon Counties.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties. We understand and agree with the purposes behind Senate Bill 1095. On the Senate side, as did Ms. Christians, we raised some issues about jail capacity. And I would also like to express my appreciation to Senators Whitsitt and Winters for the work group that was created and the work that the work group did. So I would refer the committee then to page 2, lines 13 to 15. From our perspective, this addresses the issue that we had with respect to jail capacity, and so we have no objection to the bill.
And just to amplify on that, Mr. Snyder, that for our counties that are in financial difficulty because of the decline of timber dollars, that would, in the federal government, those counties which are attempting to manage a scarce resource, which is jail beds, you think in view of that provision would not be a risk that somebody who couldn't make the new bail amount that's being prescribed here and was less of a risk to the community than somebody else, the county could still make the decision to put that more dangerous offender or person who's been charged in keep them in jail and release a person despite not having made bail. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, yes. That's how I believe these two provisions would work together, the bill itself and ORS 169-042-046. Mm-hmm. That statute was created when a lot of counties found themselves in federal court for jail overcrowding. And the decision was made, we should have the capacity without having to appear as a defendant in a federal lawsuit to establish the operating capacity of a jail. Now, there's a difference between the design capacity and the operating capacity, and the operating capacity of a number of jails in Southern Oregon may change drastically over the next several months, downward. If that happens, then those counties would have the ability to establish and to implement, under that statute, a jail capacity limit. And that limit would follow along the lines of whatever that group within the county established as the most important people to hold to the last minute. And usually the way those caps are established, the last person out the door is the violent offender or defendant who appears to pose the greatest risk to the public safety of the community. And this would not adversely impact the ability to do that.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Snyder? Thank you, Mr. Snyder. Appreciate your coming forward. That concludes all the witnesses who are signed up on Senate Bill 1095. So I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1095 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1095.
Chairman, I move committee approve Senate Bill 1095A and send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Wisnett moves Senate Bill 1095A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the improvements in the bill, particularly in my county where we, and in most, where we have a big problem with matrixing and trying to make sure we're holding the most violent offenders, that type of leeway given to my county will bring me into the yes column. I would, however, like to reserve the ability to check in with my local law enforcement officials and potentially change my vote on the floor.
Any further discussion? Representative Flores.
Mr. Chair, I'm just doing a little preliminary circle dance with joy for Representative Shields' support in committee in this bill.
Any other discussion? A love fest going on down there at the far end of the platform. If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Excuse.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Motion carries. Senate Bill 1095A moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Wisner, would you like to hear that?
Thank you. Since my last name starts with a W and a Wiz, it's would be honored to
be. Yeah, people are going to get confused when they can see those two names on the bill. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1095. We did have a work session on 1088, Representative Wisnett, and you were excused for that vote. It was a consent calendar bill. I can reopen it if you'd like to vote on it.
I apologize to the committee for being late. I had a constituent come over the mountain, so that was my reason.
And
I appreciate that very much.
Very good. I will reopen the work session on Senate Bill 1088.
And Mr. Chair, I move we suspend the rules so that Representative Wisnett can vote.
Representative Barker moves that we suspend the rules to permit Representative Wisnett vote on Senate Bill 1088. Is there any objection?
Mr. Chair, are you sure that wasn't a party line vote?
I construe that as not being an objection.
I'm not objecting.
And so ordered. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote?
Aye. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I will now reclose the work session on Senate Bill 1088. That concludes our agenda for today. And all the business we have pending in the Judiciary Committee for the time being. So just watch the notices, but I'm not aware that we have any further business scheduled for in this session.
Chair, I would be very surprised if we see another bill because of the bills that you have from Senate Judiciary you've already passed out. The only one out there is in the Ways and Means process. I'm probably going directly to the floor.
Very good.
Okay. Good job,
that concludes our business, and thank you, committee, for your attendance both today and throughout the session. We are adjourned.